The following program contains graphic material. The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right, welcome to a Wednesday and a new internet. Oh my God, so the guy was here yesterday, right? Some of you saw him sort of behind me, because that's where all the magic happens. All the connections and the stuff are all behind me on the floor. And so so the bottom line is, you know, we had a real horrible day of streaming earlier this week, where it was Monday, right? Where the stream just didn't work. And the thing is, you know, I've been fighting with AT&T for years now. And where I live, in the town of Coral Springs, Florida, they have given a monopoly to this one cable company. When I moved here, it was called Advanced Cable. And a couple of years ago, they changed to Bluestream. And so they are a cable provider, but they also are an internet service provider. ISP. I got to get Boca to do a spot for who's your ISP. So anyway, AT&T sucks out loud. But some years ago, I switched over to Bluestream, thinking it can't be worse. And boy, was I surprised. Yeah, it can be. But now, fast forward, I went back to AT&T because I had to, because Bluestream kept cutting out. Well, now, a couple of years passed, and what I had was the fastest internet that AT&T offered, and that was allegedly a 100 megabytes per second download. And the upload, which I need to be fast because that's how I stream to you guys, was a maximum of 20 megabytes per second. And it was usually more in the 12 to 15 range, to be honest with you. And so I've been waiting. Not so patiently, because you know me, I'm not a very patient person, but waiting for the fiber optics network to come in. And a couple of years ago, AT&T started laying the fiber optics in my neighborhood until they hit a water main. And I think really screwed up a couple of very expensive homes. And then it stopped. And then when you call AT&T to ask them, oh, it's coming. We're working on it. Yeah, that's
bullshit.
It's bullshit. Of course they're not. They stopped because they were probably liable for a lot of money for the damages there. So, Mythical Nomad Adventure, you're so cool. It's not Thursday, it's Wednesday, but I appreciate the YouTube donation anyway. So thank you. Anyway, so I've been waiting and waiting, and then all of a sudden we hear Bluestream is laying the fiber optics in the neighborhood. And I've been watching them for months. And finally, I got so fed up. I'm like, AT&T, we're done. We're cutting the cable. We had DirecTV through AT&T. We're dumping them all together. One, because their service sucks. But two, because I don't like how they spend their political dollars. So it is a protest, and it's also a move to faster internet. So back in the day, up until, you know, this morning, I would get, when I do the speed test thing, I would get speeds, if I was lucky, at 100 megabytes per second, but more, usually it was in the 60 to 70 range. Well, I should show you this. You know what? I'm going to do it. I'm going to bring up, hold on, let me, I guess I can bring it up on this computer. Let me bring up, I'm going to let you watch this in action, because it's so cool. I mean, for those of you who are watching a video stream, if you're listening to audio only on a podcast or on the Progressive Voices Network or some other place, I'll explain to you what's going on. Oops. So I'm going to go to speedtest.net. If you don't know it, you should, because speedtest.net is what the name suggests. It measures your internet speed. So here we go. I'm going to press go, and I press go. And on the old system, it would take 26, I guess it's megaseconds or miniseconds or milliseconds or whatever to connect. With this, it usually does it in two. So here we go. Three. went to 3. And now all of a sudden, the thing is already at 733, 750, 780, 790, 800, 830, 848, 856. I can't even keep up. Oh, and oh my goodness. Okay, so you guys aren't seeing the full thing. Oh, man. Hold on. Bottom. I got to bring it down a little bit so you could see the whole thing. So my download speed was 867.5, 867.5, and my upload speed 630.5. So I don't think we're going to have those streaming problems anymore. And if we do, then we know it's not, you know, an issue of my internet speed. Isn't that cool? That's how it should be. And I can tell you, that's normal in other countries. What we have is abnormal. But we're so, you know, we're so stuck because of all the business interests. And yeah, there's a reason. Our cell service and our internet service pales in comparison to the rest of the world. So I've just been brought into the 21st century. And hopefully, yay! Hopefully, we all, we'll benefit because the stream should be clearer. Do you guys notice any difference in the stream? Yeah, we should not have a problem. All right, so that's the business to get out of the way. So I'm celebrating the new internet, and David had fun calling AT&T and canceling. Just in case you were wondering. All right, so you know what? Today's going to be kind of a heavy show. There's a lot of stuff to talk about that, frankly, I'm not thrilled about, and I wish we didn't have to cover, but sadly we do, because this is a news-based show. Even though I'm not a reporter, I'm not a journalist, despite what some people say. I am a talk show host. I'm also a regular citizen, a concerned citizen. And that's how I approach this program, not as a journalist, but as a concerned citizen who's very curious and likes to ask a lot of questions. So we're going to do that today. I'm going to give you an update from Tatiana, who's actually, Tatiana is her name, but her friends call her Tanya. So Tanya, because she's our friend. So well, an update from Tanya, and we're going to speak with an author. And honestly, I've not had time to read the book. The book just arrived yesterday. But the minute I heard about this book, I said, yeah, I want to talk to her. The author's name is Tiffany Drayton, and she has a brand new book out. It's called Black American Refugee, Escaping the Narcissism of the American Dream. And it's interesting that she calls herself a refugee. So we're gonna talk a bit about refugees. And I believe I believe she's correct in calling herself that. And we'll get into that. But I thought, because we are going to get kind of heavy today, let's start off. Yes, and Zelensky spoke, President Zelensky. And can we have some of that, please? We'll get into all of that. But I thought, let's have a little levity at the beginning, because things aren't going to be so funny later on. And I've been sitting with this song here from Lauren Mayer for days now and just haven't had time to play it. So I thought today is the day to not say gay, or say gay. I like the second one better.
I'll say gay if I want, but don't silence kids or teachers. Hey, what's the deal? You sound like homophobic preachers. All these laws, you only pass because you're a bigot. Causing tears, building up baseless fears to boost your careers. You gotta say it. Yeah, yeah. We'll say gay every day to show these kids we've got their backs. Now they'll say
ahead as these laws start to spread in every state that's red. You gotta say it. Oi, 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 oi.
You gotta love the kazoo.
More resistory. Hello, it's 2022. You're on the wrong side of history.
What can I do? Folks, to get through to you, this crap is shameful, hateful. What's ahead as these laws start to spread in every state that's red? You gotta say it.
Oi, oi, oi. Lauren Mayer and her husband, I believe, Scott, on Say, Say Gay. I think their next song parody is going to have to be about the Stop Woke Act that also passed here in Florida that, you know, says you're not allowed to teach anything in school that may make someone feel bad about their heritage or history. We live in opposite world. And I bring that one up for a reason, because we're going to get into that. So I guess let's start with the news. First of all, Vladimir Zelensky, did you see him today? The president of Ukraine spoke to the American people, actually the Congress, who wasn't actually in, you would think they'd be in the House of Representatives chamber, but they weren't. They were in some theater inside of Congress because they didn't have the capability to show a big screen video inside the House chamber. Go figure. That's neither here nor there, though. So Zelensky delivers this speech. In the middle of it, or close to the end, it only lasted about 16 minutes, and it was, as you would expect, heart-wrenching. Because what's going on in Ukraine right now is heart-wrenching. It's hard to watch it. But I think we must, because we need to know what's going on. But it's difficult to do this day in, day out. And can you imagine what it would be like to live there and see this happen? So before I get to Zelensky, let me give you today's Tatiana or Tanya update. Her friends. So I saw someone else called her Tanya, and I said, Tanya or Tatiana? And she said, Tanya for friend, Tatiana more officially. So I said, Tanya, it is then. And I wrote, so this morning, we were communicating back and forth. And I mentioned that this was before he spoke. And I said, he's going to be speaking in a few minutes. And when he started, I wrote, he's not speaking in English. I know his English is very good. The first part of the speech was in Ukrainian, with a woman translator, so you hear that voiceover. And then he showed a video. Now, I'm struggling. Should I show the video? Because, again, all the people listening, the audio, all you're going to hear is very morose violin music. And you know what? I'm not going to show it. I will post it on the blog today where I post the show. It'll be at NicoleSandler.com/3-16-22. Getting ahead of myself here. 3-16-22. And I'll embed the video there in case you didn't see it. It's very graphic. It really shows what Russia is doing in Ukraine and has been for the last 3 weeks. Today is day 21 of this assault on this country, who did nothing to Russia, did nothing to deserve this. So when the video ended, Volodymyr Zelensky came on the screen himself again, this time he spoke English. And you know, I have the audio of that. I don't have the video of that part up. So here's the English part of the speech, President Zelensky.
Today, it's not enough to be the leader of the nation. today takes to be the leader of the world. Being the leader of the world means to be the leader of peace. Peace in your country doesn't depend anymore only on you and your people. It depends on those next to you, on those who are strong. Strong doesn't mean weak. Strong is brave and ready to fight for the life of his citizens and citizens of the world. For human rights, for freedom, for the right to live decently and to die when your time comes, and not when it's wanted by someone else, by your neighbor. Today, the Ukrainian people are defending not only Ukraine. We are fighting for the values of Europe and the world, sacrificing our lives in the name of the future. That's why today the American people are helping not just Ukraine, but Europe and the world to keep the planet alive.
Keep the planet
to
alive.
To keep justice in history. Now I'm almost 45 years old. Today my age stopped when the heart of more than 100 children stopped beating. I see no sense in life if it cannot stop the death. And this is my main mission as the leader of my people, great Ukrainians. And as the leader of my nation, I am addressing the President Biden. You are the leader of the nation, of your great nation. I wish you to be the leader of the world. Huh. Being the leader of the world means to be the leader of peace. Thank you.
Thank you.
Slava Ukraini.
Yeah, that was the voice of Volodymyr Zelensky, the president of Ukraine. As I said, the first 14 minutes or so, 13 minutes of the address was him speaking in what I'm guessing was Ukrainian, with a female translator speaking over the top of him. You know what? I will embed the entire thing on the blog today because I know a lot of people didn't see it. This morning it was 9 o'clock. People are heading off to work and stuff. So I'll put the whole thing there and I'll actually post the video in a separate standalone video, the video that he played because everyone needs to see it. As disturbing as it is, everyone needs to see it. So when the speech ended, it was a bipartisan standing ovation. It looked like everybody in the room was standing, although I learned afterwards that one person refused to clap. Who do you think it was? Come on, come on, you know. Marge! Hey, Marge! Marge Q. Green would not applaud for him. She must be a friend of, well, this other guy. Maybe I have it on video. We'll get to that later. I do want to share with you the rest of my conversation with Tanya, formerly known as Tatiana to us. I told you yesterday, they decided she and her friend and her friend's three-year-old son, I thought he was five, he's three, are going to go to Poland. So I had asked her this morning, are you ready? Are you starting? And she said, we got the insurance and all the paperwork, and they're leaving very early tomorrow morning. And she said, so from now on, I'm going to write to you from a different phone number because, you know, we communicate via the Telegram app. And the phone number she was using was the phone for the Friends Forever hostel. But she's leaving that phone with her husband. And I asked, does your husband also speak English? Would he be okay with me checking in with him while you're headed to and in Poland? And she said, unfortunately, my husband does not speak English. His knowledge of English is minimal. My husband's mother has a German teacher, so English came only when we started traveling, unfortunately. And I said, I understand. Well, I'm sure, you know, I said, please let him know. We're very concerned about him, too, but you can keep us updated on him, yeah? And then I said, I'm so scared for you. I know you don't want to leave him, but I'm relieved that you will soon be safe. And then she said, she said, it's very hard for me. My husband and I have been together for almost 10 years. I have never been away longer than 15 days. And I said, I can't imagine. I hate that this is happening to you. And then a couple of hours went by. So my response to her was at 11:38 this morning. And then at 2:18, I get a message and she said, my life just stopped. And I said, did something else happen or just the totality of all this madness? She said, I get a lot of messages about the deaths of friends, about the destroyed houses of friends. And I, my God, how do you react to that? I said, oh no, I'm sure I'm seeing the horrors of what Putin is doing to your beautiful country. I'm so sorry. Again, sending you virtual hugs, wishing I could do something real to help. And all right, well, we got a call coming in. Hi, who's this?
Hey, Nicole, Jeff from Indiana, and I'm not hearing you today.
You're not hearing me today. For where? Where are you listening?
On XM, Sirius.
I'm not on Sirius XM. I never am on Sirius XM.
Progressive Voices.
You're not hearing me on Progressive Voices? That's weird. No. Okay, hold on one second.
And the speaker is, you know, it, the lights are going off like there's sound coming on, but after Randy, you normally come on.
Right, and nothing
and
happened? Hold on one second.
It's not coming on.
Give me one second because I had to restart this computer a number of times. Let me stay with me and let's see if this gets it fixed. If I do this and this, and oh, now I got to look on this one. Bear with me a second. Hopefully it will kick in. Oh my God, everything got stopped here. Okay. Is anything happening yet? Nothing?
I don't know. I got to hang up and then turn
it back
on. Oh, I
see. Okay. Hopefully this will make it work. I'm trying one other thing. Thank you for letting me know. All right. But let me tell you, if ever you can't hear me on Progressive Voices, if for some reason it's not working, you can go to NicoleSandlerStream.com. And you'll get it there. Or go to my website, NicoleSandler.com, on the Listen Live page. But hopefully.
I'll find it.
Okay. Thank you. Sorry, Jeff. I appreciate it.
That's all right.
Okay.
Bye.
Glad I answered the phone. I hate it when that happens. All right. Let me try one more thing. Is it going? It says file not found. Yeah, they're messing with the clocks over at Progressive Voices and TuneIn. Really, it's TuneIn is where the problem is. And it's, yeah, it doesn't appear to be working. Okay, so you can go to YouTube for the video, my YouTube channel, or go to NicoleSandlerStream.com for the audio. I'm sorry, I hate that that is going on. Especially since now we have this great audio stream, but, you know, internet speed. But, yeah, no, this is not working. All right. Well, I'll have to get with them after. So I hope Progressive Voices listeners have found us elsewhere. All right. So back to Tanya. I said, I left. I said, again, sending your virtual hugs, wishing I could do something more to help. And then I asked, how's your hostel? You know, she owns a hotel, a hostel in the middle of Kyiv. And she said, amazing. She said, I hug you. People live in the hostel. I do not take money from them. I suggest leaving a small payment if possible in order to pay for electricity, water, and the internet. The guests themselves are cleaning and live like at home. I try to be helpful even at a distance. Yesterday, people from Chernihiv came to us. They lost their house. I gave this family a room. They are very grateful and my heart rejoices. This is how my days go. Emotions up and down. And I wrote back. I said, amazing. I'm glad they're safe at your home. I hope it stays out of the line of fire and the people there remain safe. And then she said, I constantly watch all the news. Sometimes I get angry. Sometimes I cry. Sometimes I can't watch anymore. When I understand that I can't do anything to help people. And I just wrote back, me too. I said, it's heartbreaking. And seeing the destruction while he lies about where he's bombing, my heart is very heavy these days. And she wrote back, she said, I understand. Tomorrow morning, we set off on the road early in the morning. I will write to you as soon as we leave. And I said, okay, please travel safely. I'll be thinking of you, sending safe energy to surround you on your journey. And she wrote back, she just signed off with the prayer emojis, a few of them. So, you know, I feel you know, I share this with you, and I'm only sharing these with you because I keep hearing from so many of you that you're also now invested in Tanya's story, in wanting to see them safe. I find it easier on my mind, on my psyche, to concentrate on Tanya and her family rather than thinking about the millions of people there. Look, just today, he did it again. Putin today bombed a theater in Mariupol where about 1,000 people were taking refuge. Just apparently pretty much leveled it. And they're expecting mass casualties. They're expecting hundreds, if not more, dead. These are the people who couldn't leave the city. This is the city where they bombed the maternity hospital. And so, and people can't get out. Every time people were trying to get out, they'd bomb it again. And so now, they were taking shelter inside this hospital, and Putin bombed the hospital. There are no words, and there's just so much one can take. And so that, you know, again, I don't have the bandwidth, I guess, the emotional bandwidth to think about the millions of people. There's over 40 million people in who live in Ukraine. 3 million so far have gotten out. That leaves many, many millions of people there trying to stay alive. And I'm so glad Tanya and her friend's little son are leaving. But I feel for her. She's leaving her husband behind. She says she hasn't been apart from him more than 15 days for the last 10 years. And you know, I won't say it, but you know what she's thinking. She's thinking she may never see him again. And it's because there's this madman there in Russia. You know, it is devastating to watch. They bombed a pool that pregnant women go to swim. It's just incredible. And so we'll keep giving you updates on Tanya as long as she keeps writing to me. And I hope she keeps writing to me every day, because frankly, if it cuts off, if I stop hearing from her, I don't think I'll be able to handle it. You know, there's so much wrong about this. There's so much sad about it. There's so much that I wish we could change and fix. You know, I have disagreements with my usual allies, you know, the real progressive coalition. You know, I just sent an email to David Swanson. I don't know if you know who David Swanson is, but he does a program. He's on the Pacifica Network. He is a peace activist. I met David Swanson probably 15 years ago, as the Gulf Wars were going on. And he was my favorite activist. He used to come on the air with me on Air America. He used to be on a lot. And he's tied in with the Code Pink people, you know, the Chris Hedges gang. And they're saying, do anything to avoid a direct confrontation. We should not, you know, help them establish a no-fly zone over Ukraine. And you know how I think, because I've been talking about it for 3 weeks now. My fear is Vladimir Putin is a madman. He's going to do whatever he wants to do, regardless of what we do. You think that if we help get those MiG fighter jets from Poland to Ukraine, that would trigger Putin? And if we don't do it, or if we don't help with other weapons or whatever, if we don't cross that imaginary line, that he won't do something stupid like use chemical weapons or even worse, nukes? That's nonsense. He's going to do whatever he's going to do. And right now, he's like a frightened animal because he thought this was going to be a quick in-out win and take over the country. And that's not happening. Not happening. And, you know, now there's some talk that that peace talks are starting to show some progress. I think what's happening is I did have information somewhere. Where did I put it? That there was some progress being made for a ceasefire. I'll believe it when I see it because I don't trust Vladimir Putin for a second. And you know what I think about. It's not about just that he's short, you know, with the Napoleon complex. He's got a really little dick. And, you know, sorry, Vlad, but this is not the way to make up for it. You know, during his speech today, he said, he actually sort of, he evoked Martin Luther King. He said, here's a quote, "I have a dream. These words are known to each of you. Today I can say, I have a need. I need to protect our sky." And then Joe Biden came out a few hours later and addressed the nation in a very brief address and signed an order to give another $800 billion worth of assistance to Ukraine. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. All right. So we're gonna sort of segue here because I told you I have a guest coming up today. And I already told you who she is. But let me tell you a little more. Tiffany Drayton is a writer. She, you know what? I want her to tell you the story. Tiffany, I hope you're going to be on camera with us so I can bring in video, but I don't see your camera on yet. So if you, turn your camera on, I'll bring you on either way, but, and I don't even have her thing up here. All right. Well, there she is. Hey, Tiffany. All right. So I'm going to bring you in here while I get your Chiron ready, because for some reason, I think I screwed that up. Hi, Tiffany Drayton. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, there you are. Oh, well, thank you for joining us. So the book is called Black American Refugee, Escaping the Narcissism of the American Dream. And I'll be honest with you, I just got the book yesterday, so I have not had a chance to read much of it yet, though I did start. But when I heard about your story, I just thought, this is so, I need to talk to this woman because this is pretty amazing. Briefly, you were born in Tobago, the nation of Tobago. Trinidad and Tobago is how most people know Tobago. And when you were a child, your mother came to the U.S., to, I guess, try to get a job and establish yourself to bring you and your sister over here to live the American dream. And you did. A couple of years later, you joined her here. And, well, why don't you tell us what happened from there? You were very young when you came here, yes?
Yeah, I immigrated to the United States of America when I was 4 years old, so really small child. You know, my first memories were really made here. And pretty much, so my book likens my relationship and Black people's relationship to the United States of America with a narcissistic abusive relationship. And the reason why I say that is because as I kind of follow throughout the course of my book, the trends of my life and the cycles of my life, like first arriving to the country and being inundated with these messages about freedom and about pulling yourself up by the bootstraps and all of these narratives that are very American, right? I really internalized and was exposed to so many of those narratives, and I likened that to kind of being love bombed. But then over the course of my relationship with this country, over the course of my years here, I kind of realized, wait a minute, there's something kind of underneath that, and something far more insidious. And that's what the book kind of chronicles.
So was it when you were a kid? I mean, let's start. You when you first moved to the States, you lived in New Jersey. And you lived in a racially diverse area, and life was good, yes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, precisely. You know, I lived in North Bergen, which is like, I call it a Hispanic oasis because that's pretty much what it is.
Uh-huh.
It's super multicultural. It's maybe 20 minutes outside of Manhattan, so it's super accessible. Just one of those towns that everybody kind of feels like they have a place in it. So, you know, my first few experiences with the United States of America, I really... really super believed the story that there was a place for everyone, because I mean, I ended up in this very diverse part of the country, but that was the 90s. And then we all know, like, the cost of living just skyrocketed. So it was literally impossible for us to continue to afford living there. And that's where the journey begins.
So you left New Jersey for financial reasons, because it's hard to live in when it's expensive. So your family moved to Texas? Or to Florida?
Yeah, we've done all of it. We've done all of it. We did Texas, we did Florida. We've moved a lot in pursuit of that ever evasive and persistently escaping further and further away from you. Like just that dream that you're trying to aspire to and achieve. It's just between getting priced out of neighborhoods, and then you had the crisis, the 2008 financial crisis that pretty much destroyed the housing market in Florida, which is where we were living at the time. Then gentrification, and then, you know, trying to find a decent, not only housing, but decently priced housing that is also situated in a neighborhood that can give you access to a good school, right? All of these things that one would imagine are the basic necessities of living in a country so rich and powerful. I mean, rich and powerful enough to send over millions and billions to countries on the other side of the world to participate in war,
right?
But yet not rich enough to offer healthcare and education and basic affordable housing for its people.
And it's only getting worse. I mean, right now things are nuts. I'm in South Florida, and it's on the front page of the papers. Rents have skyrocketed to where rents mm-hmm. now are more expensive than, you know, a mortgage payment. And everything else is skyrocketing too. And, you know, the Florida state legislature, this is the craziest state in the union. I call it Florida for a reason. They just, you know, the legislative session just ended, and I'm sure you heard about some of the stuff they passed. If you think it was a hostile environment for you, you know, 10 years ago, today, there's something that, well, is named, it's not the official name, but it's the Stop Woke Act. And do you know what this bill says? You know, first of all, you've heard all the bullshit. Critical race theory can't be taught in the schools. Well, it's not taught in the schools. And all the people who are screaming about critical race theory, I promise you, have no clue what it means, what it is. It's just a phrase that they heard that, ooh, it's evil. But now, they can't, teachers are not allowed to, or employers. This is all encompassing. You can't say anything that might make a person feel bad about themselves because of their heritage. So, I mean, it's insane. There's no way to, I mean, to even paraphrase it, because how do you explain that? It's just ridiculous. And that
really calls back to that metaphor of narcissistic abuse, right? Because the one thing that I've learned from surviving a narcissistic abusive relationship with the children of my father, right? And also being in the United States of America for so long and going through these cycles time and time again, the one thing that you realize is that it makes no sense at all. It's not supposed to make sense. Abuse is supposed to oppress. Abuse mm-hmm. is supposed to disempower. And most importantly, abusers like to control the narrative. Because you see, once you control the narrative, you have all of the power. And they understand that entirely. And that's why Black people can be fighting for basic things like, hey, just teach history in school. And they can turn that narrative around and make it about some elusive CRT that, like, nobody's even talking about that, and make some imaginary boogeyman out of it, right? Well, yeah, because they have the resources to control the narrative. And that's the thing that I really try to urge people to recognize. Like, what we are facing here is so timely and so outrageous and so egregious. And the lines that we think will never be crossed, oh, they're going to be crossed unless there is an opposing force that pushes back. And that's where, like, the united people, the people who give a damn, the people who are going to stand and say, no, look, listen, that's not where we're headed. That's where we all, you know, have to take action.
Right, right. And but what you point out, the narcissism, and we're going to bring it back around. But are the governor here, Ron DeSantis, who I call moron death sentence, this is his thing. He is a narcissist and worse. I mean, I believe he's a fascist. He wants to be Trump. He even mimics his mannerisms, the hand movements, and everything about him is creepy. This Stop Woke Act, here's a description of it that I pulled from the paper today. It would limit protected speech in workplaces with more than 15 employees and classrooms by censoring honest dialogue about systemic racism, gender, and race discrimination. It would also change Florida's employment discrimination statutes to give employees the ability to file discrimination claims against an employer engaging in trainings or discussions about Black history, LGBTQ+ issues, and other concepts of injustice and discrimination. I don't know what year this is, and I don't know what country this is.
You know, but I and this is the thing that really actually angers me, right? Because the reality of it is, it's been like this in this country for a long time.
It's just been unwritten, right?
It's been unstated. It's been kind of, you know, on bubble, mm-hmm. but not bubbling over quite yet. But the people in the pot have been feeling it. But now that it's bubbled over, well, yeah, it's scalding everyone. But the reality of it is, people of color, oppressed populations, Black people, especially Black women, have been screaming loudly for years about the direction the country was headed in. And not just headed in, but the reality of what it meant to exist in the country to begin with. Because, I, it always kind of pisses me off when people are like, how did this happen? How did we get here? I'm like, where the hell have you been?
Right. So let's talk about your story. So you were here for a number of years. You became an adult. You were in an abusive relationship with a narcissistic man. So you learn a lot about that personality disorder. And I'm sure it gave you a lot of insight into the former guy, the last president, who we do not name here. And so then you decided that you're sort of like a stranger. You're an outcast in your own country. And you said, I'm going back? Tell us about that.
Yeah. You know, it's so sad because I had not realized the toll of what being in America had taken until I started going back to my country, right? So I remember distinctly one year, my aunt inviting me to go back to Trinidad. And she's like, you know, there's this big carnival. She's like, why don't you come for carnival? And I was like, I don't care to go, you know, blah, blah, blah. But eventually my mom convinced us to go, and stepping out into Trinidad and Tobago and seeing just people of color. And I was like, where's the white folks? And automatically, and that kind of.
They're the tourists. Forces you, right? they're the tourists, right? Yeah.
They're not even because Trinidad doesn't really have too many tourists. So, all of a sudden it's like your world is flipped topsy turvy. And as a result, you kind of realize what's also absent is the constant policing of whiteness, like the way that whiteness always enforces itself on you. And so going back to Trinidad, I felt like, wait a minute, I can be free to walk around with my family and nobody's going to bother me. My kids can play on the beach. Nobody's going to give them a look. You know, like I could go to the park and I don't have to be concerned, or I could play my music loud and my neighbors don't give a shit. You know, any number of things. I could just go on and on and on about how drastically my life shifted, and thus my understanding of what it meant to even be alive as a Black person.
That's incredible. So when was it you went back? What year was that?
I would say that kind of awakening started happening when I was like 18. So maybe like 10 years, well, more than 10 years, a little over a decade ago is when I first started going back. And ever since then, it's just been, you know, me and America playing this tug of war type relationship where it's always trying to drag me back with these promises like, well, this time it'll be better. And so you come back and you go to college and you get all this debt and then you can't pay for your diploma and they withhold it. Mm-hmm, right. And so, you know, now you have to have advocacy around actually getting people their diploma that they earned that perhaps they can't pay the leftover bill on because they can't get employment because they don't have the diploma.
Right.
Right.
In fact, when you graduated, they wouldn't give you your diploma because you had some outstanding fees.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of advocacy around that at this moment because schools were withholding diplomas and transcripts from students who could not pay.
Oh, God.
And I was one of those students. And there's a journalist, Hannah Nicole.
Sure.
I just saw a thread from her today, interestingly, that she had just received her diploma from Notre Dame after 24 years.
Oh, my God. Wow.
Because they withheld it because she couldn't pay her balance. And it's like, how many times are y'all going to sucker my ass? I'm tired of this shit. You know, it's like, I'm just so fed up of America. It's constant promises, all the love bombing. Do this, you get that. Work hard, you get that. And then what do you really get? More debt, more hardship. It's like you're just constantly sinking. And the more you fight, it's like quicksand. That's how it feels, especially for young folks right now.
Right. And I get it. I get it. This is a tough world. I'll tell you, I don't know. This is a time when I'm glad I'm older, frankly, except I have a kid. My kid's 22. And so this is the world I'm leaving for her. And that's what makes me really angry. I'm not going to be here that much longer. You know what? That's where my mind goes to. But I have a daughter, and you have your kids, and I don't want to leave this world like that to them. So Tiffany Drayton, you left. You went back to Tobago. You make a life there. Things are good.
Oh, my life in Tobago is fantastic. It's just there's really no way for me to describe what it's like to see such freedom, especially with my kids, because I think being a Black parent, especially when you have a Black son, my nephew's 8, you're constantly on patrol for that next attack. For that next person who's going to say some nasty comment, or maybe for the friends at school who are going to try to outcast them because if they're going to a white school, it's just so wonderful to be freed of such burdens. It really is.
And you work as a writer, so you still write for many publications here. I know I have your bio here somewhere, but you've been published in a number of places. In fact, this book grew out of a piece you wrote for the New York Times back in 2020, when the George Floyd protests were going on, when everyone took to the streets and Black Lives Matter was in full swing. So you wrote this essay, this piece for the New York Times that took off, and that steamrolled into, and it became the book, Black American Refugee. I'm sorry?
Yeah, you know, the thing about my story that I really want people to understand is that it's really one that forces folks to reckon with a whole different reality. And seeing the reaction, especially from white folks, it's so intriguing to me because white people feel very hurt by what they read. Mm-hmm. And whenever Black women read it, they feel very empowered. And I'm like, well, where is that? What exactly is happening where there's this gap, right? And I realize it's an experiential gap. And the horror and the sadness of what it means to be Black in this country, that Black people even normalize to a large extent because we have to survive it. For many white people, it's so unfathomable even because it's the insidiousness of it. And it's the constantness of it, that many things that you don't even begin to think about, and all of a sudden you're forced to reckon. So it's a really interesting moment for me to watch this country that comprises of so many different kinds of people really be forced to reckon with so many issues in such a deep way, and not just in the superficial, well, yeah, there's racism way, but in a, now we're getting to read entire stories of what people's lives are like in what was meant to be the most powerful, equal democracy on the planet. So what exactly happened? Where did we go wrong? But I feel like there's so much hope in this moment, because I am a firm believer in honesty. And I feel as if creating that platform where more people can speak more honestly is so crucial to how we move forward and how we move forward together.
Without a doubt. So, Tiffany, you mentioned we touched on that there was an abusive relationship with a narcissistic man. And that word, we've learned a lot about narcissism in the last few years because of the former guy. But the subtitle of the book is Escaping the Narcissism of the American Dream. What do you mean by that? What is the narcissism of the American Dream?
Well, when I sat down to write the book, I really just wrote my story, all of my experiences from the time I was a child to the time I was an adult in chronological order. And there was this bit about narcissism that I really wanted to work in, but I was just like, how do I do it? And then as I sat with the text, I realized, wait a minute, it actually happened naturally because that's what it was. So for example, when you're first going to school as a small Black girl, you're in class and you learn about that America's the best country in the world, and the Europeans came and sat with the Pilgrims and had Thanksgiving, and you know, everybody can work, if they work really hard, they're gonna get far, and you believe it, right? And
of
then
course.
As you kind of as you work your way through these experiences in America, it's this constant roller coaster, because eventually you're educated enough to see, wait a minute, that's not real. And not only that, but you start venturing out into the world and you see things like ghettos and you're like, So then why is that there, you know? And you see how oppressed people of color are. And you understand that there's Native American reservations where the alcoholism is prevalent and there's a lack of access to basic resources. And you're like, why is that like that? And the more you begin to question, the more you either, you do one of two things. You either further internalize the narratives that you're being sold, which are crap, mm-hmm. or you start trying to fight back, which brings its own struggles and traumas. So pretty much as I charted my life story, I began to see that constant up and down of that cycle of abuse, whether it be that beginning with love bombing where you're sold all of these dreams and then you move into devaluation where a society can devalue an entire demographic of people and call them crackheads and call them thugs just to justify their oppression and mistreatment of them. And then, of course, you move into discard where you can just throw away a person as if they meant absolutely nothing at all.
Yeah.
And
we do that
millions
a lot.
Of black men up in prison, right?
Yeah.
So as I went through my life story, I started seeing it so clearly. I was like,
that's an interesting way to look at it. As is your use of the word refugee in the title, Black American Refugee. And I just looked it up to see what the dictionary definition was. And it is a person who has been forced to leave their country in order to escape war, persecution, or natural disaster. So you believe that you were forced to leave to escape persecution, yeah?
Oh, absolutely. By the time I was writing this book, I had graduated from college with no degree and no means to actually get my diploma.
And no degree because they wouldn't give it to you because you still owed some fees.
Because I owed fees, so they wouldn't give me my
Amazing.
Diploma. So I, despite going to school for 4 years, I had no diploma. I could barely get employment. I was living in a ghettoized neighborhood where it was constant violence, where my neighbors were dying regularly, where there was just hopelessness. You know, I barely could even get out of bed so many times. I was just like so exhausted and depressed. And then on top of that, the additional layer of being exposed to the violence of an abusive relationship, which of course Black women are more likely to end up in because the conditions of Blackness in America make it so that abuse is more prevalent and intimate partner violence is more prevalent. So by the time I was in my mid-20s, late 20s, I started to realize this is a matter of life and death. Like, being here is actually detrimental to my entire well-being. And making that decision at that moment was so crucial because, you see, my mom was a nurse, actually. My mom was a hospice nurse for, I don't know, almost 2 decades. Wow. And she left to come live with me in Tobago, December 2019. And so the pandemic came only a few months later.
Ooh.
And all of her friends were calling her while we were there. And they were like, we don't have any PPP. You know, the unit that she worked on, it was a hospice unit. They turned it into a COVID unit. So many of her friends, their homes were foreclosed on because they were going through financial issues, or they were trying to figure out how exactly to manage the financial issues in the midst of the pandemic. And none of those issues have gone away.
No. Wow. Wow. And so your mom went full circle. So she's back with you in Tobago. And what about, did your sister go back too?
Yeah, my sister, my nephew, everybody. None of my family members live in America anymore.
Now, do you have dual citizenship?
Yes, fortunately I do.
Wow. You know, your story is fascinating. And, you know, when you talk about refugees, I mean, obviously we're keeping a close watch on what's going on in Ukraine. And I don't know how much you heard when you came in, but I made contact with a woman over there. She owns the very nice hostel in the middle of Kyiv, a low-cost hotel. And she and her husband, they tried to stay put for a couple of days, and then they realized they needed to leave. So they left and they went to a remote region where it was quiet for a few days. And from our communications, it sounded like she could breathe a little bit. And then the shelling and bombing started there. And so mm-hmm. now a friend of hers is with them as well, with her 3-year-old. And her, I don't know if it's her husband, but her man. We lost you, but hopefully you're still there. I think it's a signal. Okay, we lost your video. But Tiffany's still with us. So anyway, they finally decided that the women and the little boy are going to leave and go to Poland. They're leaving tomorrow morning. And, you know, even there, you hear the stories of, and Ukraine is it's a Caucasian country, but there are people of color there, and those people are having a hard time getting out. You hear the stories of they get from Kyiv to get on a train and they're told, no, you can't go. These other people will go first. It's astounding that here we are in 2022 and this crap is still going on around the world. It's not just here, but it's worse here. And it seems like it's getting worse day by day. And maybe it's the backlash against electing Obama president.
I don't think it's just a matter of the backlash from Obama. When we really sit down with looking at the status of Black people in America who have been in this country since slavery, mm-hmm. right? When you start to look at the outcomes of that demographic, people whose entire family have been here for hundreds of years, that's one of the hardest hit demographics in the United States of America. These are the people who have been entirely left behind on purpose. These are the people who the government have oppressed on purpose and who have had no opportunity to get ahead and who live in neighborhoods where gunshots are normal every day. In fact, I have lived in these kinds of neighborhoods. All I need to do is take a walk to anywhere in Baltimore, not anywhere in Baltimore, like go to East Baltimore.
Right.
It looks war-torn. There are buildings that are entirely dilapidated. And in fact, I often wonder, did somebody drop a bomb here? So while wars can be outrageous and horrific, when we see violence explode out of nowhere, there's also that slow drip of the violence that we have allowed to prevail that has destroyed the lives of Black people in this country for centuries,
yeah.
that we have normalized, that of course does not get the same type of outrage until we are forced to look at a man die underneath the knee of a police officer, which is saddening.
It's horrific. I can feel it. I remember that day so clear. I was here on the air when the video thing crossed my thing, and I brought it up and aired it. It was the first time I had seen it, and we watched it together. And I could, you know, the feel, I could not believe this was going on. If you got to find a silver lining somewhere, it's that you're writing this book. We're talking about it. Finally, I think Black voices are being heard, not loudly enough, but we're moving. I hate to say we're moving in the right direction because we've gone so far in the wrong direction, but at least the voices are starting to be heard. And it's that, you know, the old adage, I'm mad as hell, I'm not going to take it anymore. Right. Enough is enough already.
There's this sense of urgency, and much of that is linked to the outrage that is felt when we no longer normalize abusive behavior, when we no longer normalize oppressive behavior, right? Mm-hmm. And this is a really crucial and beautiful moment for humanity, because this moment demands accountability, because everybody has a smartphone. The whole world is so interconnected. So we look at the shelling and bombing of Ukraine every single day. And that demands on our part, just for us to sleep good at night, a sense that we must do something and there must be action. And so if we can feel that across all of humanity for issues that are damning for any single one of us, then of course, I think that there is a silver lining to this moment. And it's that future where everybody's like, no, we're not doing this shit. We can live better than this.
Well, I hope so. and we'll keep speaking out. That's all we can do. And, you know, talking to Tanya in Ukraine, all I can do is spread the truth. And she said, that's all I need you to do. We need to get the truth out there because there's so much disinformation and propaganda and lies. And that came from the narcissist, you know, who occupied the White House for 4 years. Tiffany Drayton, it was a pleasure to meet you. Thank you so much. I look forward to really reading the book. It's called Black American Refugee: Escaping the Narcissism of the American Dream. Thank you for writing this. I think it's really important, and I hope a lot of people read it.
Oh, thank you so much for having me and for reading the book. And hopefully you enjoy it when you do get to it. Thank you so much.
I will. I promise. Thank you so much. Great meeting you. Take care. Bye-bye. All right. Tiffany Drayton, you can find her on Twitter at Drayton Tiffany. I'll put links on the blog as, you know, I do. And with that, we're done. Wow. You know, these days, some days are more difficult than others. I'm glad I had the opportunity to talk with her. It took my mind off of Ukraine for a minute, but also made me not realize, because I already realized it, but, you know, just drives home how ugly things are in this world. And really, because of skin color? And she's a gorgeous woman, by the way, if for those of you who didn't see the video. I mean, stunning. And to think that someone's discriminated against. I get crap from right-wingers on Twitter about my looks. I'm fat and ugly and old. Like, that's gonna make me go, oh, my political opinions are wrong? You know, it was like Ellie Mastal at the beginning of the week saying that they come at him with comments about his appearance. That all you got? It's so surface. And yet you see this shit, this Stop Woke Act nonsense in Florida. And it just, it strengthens my resolve to say we can no longer put people like the former guy in office. You need to get rid of moron death sentence because they're taking us down a really ugly road that we don't want to travel. All right. With that, we're done. Done for the day. Thank you for being here. I told you today was going to get heavy, and that's why I wanted to play the funny thing at the beginning, because I certainly couldn't do it now, right? And that was a great song, and it works with the Say Say Gay, right? All right, everybody. You have a good night. Tomorrow's Thursday. Howie Klein will be here, and we just keep on keeping on. That's all we can do. I will leave you with the news, and once again, say thank you for listening. Until tomorrow. We'll do this.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Vladimir Putin's invasion of Ukraine began 3 weeks ago, 21 days ago today. Though to the millions of Ukrainians fleeing their homes, it's been an eternity. The attacks escalated on Wednesday following a visit by the prime ministers of Poland, the Czech Republic, and Slovenia to Kyiv to meet with President Zelensky in person and show their support for the country. Zelensky indicated that peace talks with Russia were starting to show some hope and said Ukraine was prepared to accept security guarantees short of his goal of NATO membership. President Biden plans to travel to Europe next week to discuss Ukraine with our European allies. But a week in this war is an eternity. So Zelensky took his case directly to Congress this morning. In a speech that lasted just 16 minutes, President Zelensky thanked the U.S. for its help and generosity, but spotlighted the deaths and destruction in Ukraine at the hands of Putin and Russia, and he begged for more help, especially in instituting a no-fly zone. Zelensky referenced Pearl Harbor and 9/11, explaining, quote, "We see 9/11 every day for 3 weeks." At one point, he stopped talking to show a video, a compilation of horrific images showing the terrifying attacks on civilians and magnificent buildings turned to rubble. And after the video, Zelensky finished the speech in English.
Now I am almost 45 years old. Today my age stopped when the hearts of more than 100 children stopped beating. I see no sense in life if it cannot stop the deaths. And this is my main mission as the leader of my people, great Ukrainians. And as the leader of my niche, I am addressing the President Biden. You are the leader of the niche, of your great nation. I wish you to be the leader of the world. Being the leader of the world means to be the leader of peace. Thank you. Slava Ukraini.
Despite his main plea for what most in the administration and Congress will not help with, creating a no-fly zone, President Zelensky received a lengthy standing ovation from both sides of the aisle. Russia on Tuesday imposed sanctions on President Biden, Secretary of State Antony Blinken, and a few other U.S. officials in response to the U.S. sanctions against Russian targets over the invasion of Ukraine. The sanctions are mostly symbolic, but do indicate the tensions are intensifying between Moscow and Washington. The sanctions, by the way, also target the Secretary of Defense, Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman, CIA Director, and other high-ranking officials. And it would bar all of them from travel to and would seize any assets held in Russia. Former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and President Biden's son Hunter Biden were also on the list, though neither of them serve in the Biden administration. The White House on Tuesday warned lawmakers that without new funding, it would have to severely cut back on the U.S. COVID-19 response. Unless Congress approves more money, state allocations of monoclonal antibody treatments will be reduced by 30% starting next week and might run out entirely in May. The government also will lack the money necessary to offer all Americans a fourth shot if another booster or a modified vaccine is needed to fight another coronavirus variant. There will also be less government money for research on future vaccine versions. The Biden administration spelled all of this out in a letter to Congress on Tuesday, but Republicans say any new COVID-19 funds must be fully paid for. Believe it or not, Joe Manchin strikes again. Seriously, Sarah Bloom Raskin has withdrawn from consideration as one of President Biden's nominees for the Federal Reserve's Board of Governors. Raskin is a former Fed governor and deputy treasury secretary under Obama. Biden nominated her back in January to be vice chair of supervision at the Fed, which would have made her a top banking regulator. But Republicans boycotted those Senate confirmation hearings over her support for stronger Fed action against climate change. Well, this week, Joe Manchin said he wouldn't support Raskin, and with zero support from Republicans, that effectively blocked her confirmation. The stalemate has also delayed four other Fed nominations. Just amazing. And finally, yes, we sprung forward last weekend, but maybe we won't have to fall back in a few months. Well, in a surprise move, the Senate unanimously passed legislation making daylight savings time permanent for the entire country. The bill, titled the Sunshine Protection Act, was co-sponsored by Marco Rubio and Sheldon Whitehouse. Nancy Pelosi hasn't taken a position on it, and the White House hasn't said whether or not Biden backs it, but the bill goes to the House. Maybe call Nancy Pelosi's office and ask her to bring it up for a vote. Okay? I got the news. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.